second. India have won the Test match. India have won the series.
Hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of the 36 All Out podcast. Okay, actually, I'll take that back. Hello and welcome to the 81 All Out podcast, where we are talking about the Adelaide Test that Australia won by 8 wickets. We are chatting a few hours after that test, so about 6 hours after that test. So I have pretty much a full house today. We have Mahesh from who is at Cornered on Twitter. We have Ashoka, who is at AB Van on Twitter, and we have Karthikeya Date, who is at Cricketing View. All regular panelists here to do what we call processing grief, or to discuss whether this is grief or whether this is some other emotion. This is, of course, with regard to India's 36 for 9 or 36 all out, where they collapsed against Cummins and Hazelwood and the rest of the Australian bowling lineup and went one down in the series. First of all, welcome, guys. Thanks for joining.
Hey, guys.
So this choice of this panel might be a little odd because all of us are of largely similar age, all in our 30s, who have seen quite a bit of heartbreaks before. So we would have loved to have someone in their early 20s or maybe even teens here.
Does anyone have an Instagram account?
Yeah, I have an Instagram account.
Oh, so, okay, fine. That we have fair representation.
Yeah, okay. So,
I don't have a heart. So, I'm completely fine.
Yeah, exactly. So, personally watching for me, I was like, okay, fine. 1 wicket, 2 wickets, 3 wickets in the morning. And then after a point of time, I was like close to chuckling. I was like, oh my God, okay, this is actually going to happen. And for a moment, I was convinced that it's going to be less than 26 all out. And so I said, okay, this is going to be a record that nobody will forget forever and ever until the day some other team bats like this. So the thoughts that were going in were more like comedic and random rather than any form of heartbreak or grief. And, you know, again, as I said, I'm probably a bit too old for these cricketing heartbreaks, having watched India collapse in Durban in 96 and Bridgetown in 97 and various other mini collapses that led to losing test matches. Chennai 99, classic example of a lower order collapse that I still think of now and then. I don't know if I will be talking about this test with as a heartbreak in the future. What do you guys think? Maybe Ashoka, you can start off.
I don't know what you're talking about, dude. I am just like filled with rage and anger. I think I'm not going to forget this test even after I die. At this point in time in history, when the nation needs to heal itself, fucking these guys go and do such stuff. Like, this is not how we represent our country, dude. What the hell is happening, man?
Okay.
First of all, wait. I'm not done. First of all, there are things that need to happen right now. Okay, a team has gone representing our great nation and has gone out for 36 all out. What is Modi ji going to do about this? When are we going to get some explanation, you know, from Anushka Sharma? The nation has been asking her to explain this cricketing debacle. She at least needs to write a public letter, right, to us, explaining what role she has played and why this has happened. Thirdly, why can't we buy Kane Williamson? What is wrong with it? I mean, how much does he cost? Ambani, we have Ambani. Why can't we buy him, make him, you know, at least if not captain, vice captain, at least make some 100, 200 every game, save us. So these are things that we need to immediately look into before even we go into why we lost. Obviously, we lost because I think our batsmen, I think, are, you know, intoxicated with IPL money. This is why I think we lost.
I'm surprised you haven't got an invitation to join an Indian news channel yet to be an expert panel to talk about this. But I think when people hear this, they'll immediately invite you.
You know why I started like this? Because anyways, Karthikeya is going to come and talk sense. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get all the rants out of the way.
You need somebody to neutralize it. Okay. Before we get to the sense part, I mean, the dispassionate, brutal sense of Karthikeya, let's get Mahesh in and see what he thinks about it.
Yeah, like you kind of put the disclaimer at the beginning, all of us are of similar age group. And I don't think for any of us cricket matters. Well, cricket matters, but the result of a cricket match matters as much as it used to when we were younger and more impressionable. The other thing that I was thinking is, I mean, I honestly speaking, I'm not feeling anything about it. Like Sidney mentioned, I found it funny and I found it amusing to some extent. And then you look at more practically and the fact that the bowling is fantastic and like Karthikeya has already written a piece about outliers and how the odds of it, you know, given the quality of bowling, sustained quality of bowling, it will happen once in a while and it need not be 36 or whatever. There's that rational part of it coming through. And just to be sure, because, you know, we are probably slightly more distant, more mature or whatever, I called my nephew just before starting this recording, who was actually 14 years old, coincidentally, the same age as I was when 81 All Out happened. He's very clearly disappointed. There's no doubt about it. I don't think he quite feels it the same way we felt when 81 All Out happened. I'm thinking, I don't think cricket as such occupies such a central part of everyday life in India at the moment. And certainly not Test cricket. I mean, which is not to say he cares about Test cricket. He was getting up early in the morning to watch even the tour games. He cares deeply about it. But I don't think...
You know why, Mahesh? You know, after that 81 All Out debacle, there was nothing following the hour after it or the day after it or the week after it. We were just wallowing through the result. Right now, people have Hotstar, Prime Video, Netflix. I think they will just, you know, binge another series and forget about this in like 2 hours.
That's for slightly older people, but even for kids, like, you know, while I was talking to him, he was having another.
I think they
of,
would be on Twitch stream, Machan. They would
on
be
on Zoom call at school or whatever. You know, life itself is a little more intense, I guess. And also, I mean, the general discourse on cricket itself, like whatever Ashoka started with, would have been par for a newspaper article in the past, right? I mean, forget the Modi ji part, but in general, saying, oh, these people are intoxicated by money, you know, they have lost their technique, these guys don't know how to play the moving ball. In the good old days, Sunny would never touch a ball outside the option. These were legitimate sort of discourses. But today, you know, look at, I mean, KD is a bit of an extreme, but what KD's extremity has done is even the mainstream is moving towards that, right? I mean, just now, as I'm talking, Siddharth Munga has a piece up about how, you know, this was likely to happen given the quality of bowling, perhaps not 36. In fact, in that, he even mentions Sunny's comments echoing similar sort of thoughts. I think the whole discourse has also become a lot more nuanced and practical. Of course, you know, the other extreme has also gone up in terms of pure numbers, but the media that we care about has also, I think, become more mature. And the other point that I want to add is, if you had to get a 36 All Out, two teams playing Test cricket after a break of nearly a year, both teams in sort of a bio bubble for an extended period of time coming after IPL, India particularly going with hardly any practice, you know, moving straight from white ball cricket to red ball cricket, and the Aussie attack being as good as it is, as disciplined as it is, as penetrative as it is. If you had to pick one 36 All Out probability, this is not a bad situation, to be honest, playing day-night cricket with a pink ball, which India has very little practice of, in Adelaide with extremely skillful bowlers. I mean, I'm struggling to even think of it through the prism of grief at the moment, which is quite sad, you know. Like, I mean, for all the practical sort of prism, I want it to be seen as a heartbreak, because that's the essence of sports. If you don't see it as a heartbreak, I don't think sports will mean as much to the society as it would.
I don't think you've become old. I think you've become cynical. That's what it is.
Okay, shots fired, well, Karthikeya. Now it's your turn.
Let's get now, talking about heartbreaks, let's get the one guy here who has no heart. So Karthikeya, take it away with your cold and brutal comments.
Well, I think there is a generational shift. No, I mean, 20 years ago in 1998, just 1 year after 81 All Out, CP Surendran would still write in the paper that, you know, batsmen walk out to the middle alone, you know, not Tendulkar. Every time Tendulkar walks to the crease, the whole nation tatters and all marches with him in the battle arena. A pauper people pleading for relief, remission from the lifelong anxiety of being Indian by joining in spirit with their visored savior. It's no longer that. Virat Kohli is not doing that anymore. you know, and I mean, Virat Kohli does not occupy a comparable space. There is no single player who occupies a spot comparable to that. You know, this is a very strong Indian side. This is a side which won in Australia last time. This is a side which has recently won a World Cup. It is the richest cricket board in the world. We sit in a different place now in India as far as cricket is concerned. And so there's not going to be that, we make fun of that reaction, you know, which Ashok has so wonderfully illustrated. You know, but that was a reaction which was, I would suggest, that was a reaction which was used to be made in good faith. You know, it used to come from a place of genuine angst. You know, now we are in a position where, you know, the people who are angry have no reason to be angry other than, you know, for that it is a form of entertainment to be angry. You know, so, you know, right now it's the cricket part of it is pretty simple. I mean, yeah, Cummins and Hazelwood are extraordinary bowlers. Cummins is probably one of the greatest bowlers of all time right now. I mean, we are not supposed to say all this because, you know, the human race was just flat out superior 20 years ago. And, you know, today's humans are not as great as they were, you know. You know, today's bowlers can, by definition, not be as great ever as McGrath or Lilly or any of those people. But they are, frankly. That's just what the record says. You know, Pat Cummins has an extraordinary record and he's an extraordinary bowler. You know, they're quick, they're hostile, and they have something which those earlier bowlers didn't have, which is, I think, this video analysis and all the assistance that they have nowadays is making them that much more precise. You know, I mean, there's a reason why Shami and Cummins and all these people can hit their spots, like, you know, and on television they can pinpoint those spots so fast, you know, because everybody knows where they're going to, what they're going to do. You know, tactics have almost completely gone out of the game now. Because everybody knows what everybody else can do, and the people who can do it better are going to win. And sometimes that's going to mean that they're going to bowl 5 unplayable balls and they're going to get 5 wickets. And, you know, one guy is going to then try to push for runs and, you know, chase a wide one, and that's going to fly straight to gully, and that's it. That's 36 for 9.
Yeah, so when I was watching it, I mean, the first thought that comes to mind is that, you know, on another day, you would have probably had like repeated plays and misses. And then eventually, you know, Pujara gets stuck in or Kohli gets stuck in and then you move on. You talk about how good the batting was, how patient they were, how good the bowling was, how riveting a contest it was. I mean, think of Headingley in 2002, right? I mean, Dravid and Bangar, they probably missed more than they played for long stretches of time on day one. And India could have easily collapsed for close to nothing there as well, or in so many other cases where, you know, India batted through tricky phases. And it just happened like, I mean, it just seemed like this was a lottery here for Australia. I mean, it more than every time a batsman could have played and missed, he was nicking. And it was interesting for me to read this one tweet actually yesterday from the CricWiz team, the CricWiz analyst, which said that according to our expected wickets model, the deliveries Australia bowled in this innings would on average have yielded a score of 60 for 3. And through a mixture of bad luck and poor batting, India didn't get close to that. So what it tells me is essentially that, you know, on most other days, this could have been like a torrid examination followed by a recovery followed by something. I mean, India could have probably been bowled out for 100 or 120 or something, or 81 for all you know. But pure cricketing wise, I mean, this is not something that should be. I mean, this is something that we all know can happen in cricket, right?
You know, what I was thinking was like, now it looks like a retrospective view, but because it was 36-9, when you look back at innings one, right, like when India were 244 something, at one point when Kohli was run out, it was 188-3. If you actually see, Pujara nicked at least three deliveries which fell short of the slips, right? And Rahane was also nicking it and it was running down, you know, third man. So those are also the same deliveries that, you know, that could have gotten wickets, that could have yielded wickets. And if not for our drop catches, those, we would have had more wicket-taking deliveries as well. So the 244 and 191 were slightly, you know, outliers in that direction. Or you can't call them outliers, but they just happened because those balls didn't get yield wickets. But 36, you know, you have to call it a bad luck and move on. That's it. That's all that you can do. Because every delivery that could take wicket took wicket. So what are you going to do about it? And Kartikeya was saying, except for, you know, Kohli, who chased a wide one, which you can argue that he could have left, if you can argue at all, because given the context, he was trying for runs. Balls that these guys got were like, man, I mean, if you got out to those balls, in isolation, if you look at them, they're all like, fair enough, you got out to a good ball. Can't do much.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that there's any criticism in any direction that's to be leveled. I mean, I think that's generally true, but especially in this situation, you know, because, you know, there is no such thing as a batsman without a technical flaw, right? Everybody has and there's no such thing as an attacking shot which does not carry with it some degree of risk, right? So if the bowling attack is going to give you nothing, you know, even Tendulkar, you know, when you hit on the rise, you are taking a chance, right? And when you have a bowling attack which gives you nothing, and this is like four bowlers and there are no easy overs at all, then the amount of risk you have to take to score runs is extremely high. And so the option you have is either to sort of not score runs as fast, which is what happened in the first two innings, because, you know, India also have an outstanding attack right now, and try and survive. And, you know, even that can be difficult, you know. So when you're being asked to defend, and these guys, I mean, these Cummins and Hazelwood are quick, and the control of length is quite extraordinary. You know, I don't think there's anything to suggest that this Indian batting is somehow any worse than any previous Indian batting lineups. They're just as good. You know, I don't think any previous Indian batting I would have done better here. You know, I mean, this is just a great attack, and they had a very, very good day. I mean, they had an unusually good day, and they're not always going to have that. I would be very surprised if they get India out for two figures again in this series. They're not going to do that.
I mean, I understand. In fact, I'm a little surprised that all of us are pretty much talking from a similar sort of perspective on this, which is the cricketing view, as Kartikeya would like to call it, is fine. But I'm, in a way, I'm actually concerned about the fact that there's not enough grief over this. And that's from the point of view of how much stakes do people have. Like, for instance, we talk about all the heartbreaks, Chennai 99 or 81 all out or whatever. The loss of a test match, and particularly when you get out like that, whatever, for cricketing reasons or non-cricketing reasons, that should evoke a very strong feeling amongst the followers. I know Kartikeya doesn't like partisans, and I'm not a particularly sort of partisan cricket fan, but I also think that's what drives the interest in the game, not necessarily the commerce. Like, if you don't feel about such a loss 20 years later, is there a point of investing in the sport? So I have a fundamental problem with this. Like, should people like us be the barometer of how popular or how important test cricket is to people? I would rather think someone like 20 years younger to me, like a younger self of mine, who's still carrying on, who fucking starts a podcast now and wants to call it 81 all out, right? So my concern is that, I mean, perhaps you're not talking to the right people or you're not looking at the right people. I mean, I don't want to see a 40-year-old complaining about how these guys are useless and good for nothing. I mean, that doesn't represent anything for me. But I want to know what this, people who are 15 and 20 and 25 are thinking.
You know, can I give a simile which will be slightly controversial, like this, when religious people and atheists argue, one of the point it comes down to is, if you don't believe in the beauty of creation, I mean, then what interest do you have in life and all that? So the answer is like, you know, without your mythical stories, life can still be interesting, right? Like scientific facts can still be interesting. The same way I can say that without all this myth building, test cricket is immensely interesting in any which way. Obviously, 36 for 9 hurts a little bit as an Indian fan. But where these guys bowled, there was, I mean, they were pinpointly bowling at one spot or a small square in the pitch for like hours on end. And, you know, it's almost a gladiatorial kind of thing, right? Like for now, the batsman is the guy who's like, who has to now figure out how to survive, how to, you know, depend on luck. And if he comes out trumps, like Kohli did almost, it was, I think, if not for the run out, I would have believed that he could have gotten 100 there. That would have been a great thing to watch. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Like even 81 all out, for instance, when I think Sidvi, me and Krishna did a retrospective on that. So when we were reviewing it like much later, it was fairly obvious to us that on that wicket, against that kind of wicket, against that kind of a pace attack, 120 was practically ungettable. But it still hurt us. We can make a distinction between the cricketing merits of it. Of course, even a very hardcore partisan fan might see the sense in the 36 all out here. But I want to know how much it hurts, because that's what carries, I would say that in many ways, that's what carries the sport. I mean, this kind of dispassionate thing, you and I can say, oh, this is so much fun to watch and all that. But I also want to see that passion, not necessarily the one that Karthikeya will soon call monstrous, but more genuine, as he himself called, right? In the 90s, this used to be a sincere sort of outrage. I want to see that sincere outrage.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Basically, I think it also is context, right? Like in the 90s, when India went to West Indies, that 81 all out, why was it such a big deal? Because since 1986, India hadn't won outside Asia. Apart from that win in Sri Lanka in 93, I think it was, or 92. Basically, they hadn't won a test series outside Asia, right? So you go to Zimbabwe. I mean, in that podcast, we spoke about that collapse against Zimbabwe as well when India went in Harare. And that was like you have this golden chance to win a test in a test series, this one-off test against Zimbabwe, and you blew it. And then you come to West Indies, and then you have all these flat pitches which are ending in draws, and then you have this one result pitch and you blow it, right? So I think it's that thirst for victory as well. And then you go to South Africa with a bit of hope, because you've beaten them in a home series. And then the hope is like completely obliterated with that 66 and 100 all out in Durban. And then basically it was a time when India rarely won test series. I mean, what they were not a pathetic side, as it's often made out to be these days. They won a few things. I mean, they were in the World Cup semi-final and they won like some important games. But of course, we remember it because of the heartbreaks. Now, this current scenario is totally different. So, I mean, in this Indian team has won everywhere, except they won series everywhere except South Africa. And even in South Africa, they ended up winning a test on the last tour. They won like the T20 World Cup in 2007, World Cup in this thing. And then they're always contenders in every series and every tournament. So I think where this grief could have really gone to another level is in 2018 and 19, like the previous tour to Australia. Imagine if India, you know, after winning in Adelaide, losing in Perth, and then winning in Melbourne. Now imagine a scenario when they went to Sydney and then they were in this pretty good position, they had the advantage, and then they collapsed for 36. I think that would have been really a blow, because there you had that chance to win a series in Australia without Smith and Warner, you know, for the first time ever. You go into the decider and then you collapse. Now, I think that context would have then taken the grief to an altogether different level. But this context, again, in the series context, it's the first test. And India have already won in Australia just the previous time. So I think all that also plays a part, apart from, of course, the general sense of how, you know, with the IPL coming in, India always wins the IPL, right? Like, so your team, a team that you support, I mean, players that you support invariably will end up winning the IPL every year. So
India winning IPL always is like US winning the World Series of baseball, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's similar. So the chances of grief are even less because, you know, if you're a supporter of CSK or Mumbai Indians or, you know, any team that has won the IPL before, I think, I'm sure there's some team that has won it before. I just can't think. Oh, yeah. Of course, Hyderabad and Rajasthan won it in the first episode.
Don't talk like a Ranji Trophy reporter, please. Don't call it Hyderabad. They're Deccan Chargers, they were.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Deccan Chargers. I'm saying, you know, an Indian cricket fan, even if your team, if you support RCB hasn't won, of course, but, you know, you may still be a fan of Rohit Sharma. You may still be a fan of Dhoni, and their teams have won the IPL. So I'm saying you're much more used to winning.
There's also another thing which has changed, which is that this current generation of the Indian side is probably by far and away the best Indian side I've seen, at least. But there's
Hello, Ravi Shastri. Ravi Shastri, are you here? Hi.
Oh, it's true. I mean, they win everywhere. You know, they have fast bowling, they have spinners, they have batsmen, they have everything. You know, they have two wicket keepers. Like, it's crazy. But at the same time, they're sort of confronted with this sense that, you know, you will never compete with quote-unquote the greatest generation. You know, whereas 20 years ago, there was still this sense that, you know, things were on an upward trajectory. Things were moving up, you know. And the way we used to tell that story was to tell the story of the batting, no? First there was Gavaskar, and then there was Tendulkar, and then there was Sehwag. And uske baad kya hua? Nothing happened. It's over. Everything is since then apparently in decline. You know, and nowadays they can't play the moving ball, they can't play the swinging ball, they can't play the turning ball. Nobody averages 50. This, that, and the other.
No, but that happens in every generation. Like we had Udar Pateria on our podcast, and he was saying when he met DB Deodhar, he was saying the same thing about Tendulkar. He was saying Tendulkar, yeah, he's a good batsman, but, you know, a little bit technically not as good as Hazare. Like, you know, every generation thinks that way.
Yeah, but right now around world cricket, and this is all thing always pretty much been true, that if you take the best five or six teams in the world, like, then their batting lineups are more or less equal, right? Give or take, say, 20-30 runs, right? But where they are different is that the best team has like three really good bowlers, or in this case, four really good bowlers. And if you don't have four really good bowlers, then you are going to struggle. You know, because Australia right now are so good that they're not offering any easy overs. I mean, even that fifth bowler, Cameron Green, he's not like Hansi Cronje, man. He's like a proper bowler.
He bowls 140. There are
He bowls, I mean, I sort of jokingly call him the new Keith Miller, but that's sort of increasingly looking like less of a joke. With every over that he bowls, you know. But that's a huge difference, you know. If you have, if compared to having to bowl, like having only two strike bowlers and then having two other bowlers against whom the opposition can, you know, at least comfortably survive, if not comfortably score, that's a huge advantage. Like, I mean, that's why, especially in test cricket, the bowling is what matters, you know, because every side has roughly the same amount of batting. You know, okay, some are more beautiful than others and some are more exciting than others. And occasionally someone may have one extra great batsman than others, but that one extra great batsman doesn't give you as much as like one extra very good bowler, you know, and that's what decides test matches. And the reason India is so good right now is that they have always had three or four really good bowlers, you know. And even in this test match, imagine if they had Ishant Sharma as well, you know, the things might have been very different. You know, in fact, forget that. Play today the third morning session again, and it will not end up 36 all out.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you just play with exactly the same circumstance. I mean, the same conditions and everything. Obviously, you could probably have India making much more.
Yeah, and what is deceptive about this is that actually, over the first innings of this test match, India's position was extraordinary. And they probably overperformed to get a 50-something run first innings lead. You know, so they were actually in a really strong position. And, you know, imagine that, you know, instead of 36 all out, you get to like 136 all out. And then, you know, they're chasing 190 or something. And that's, then you would have India's favorites. You know, in that situation.
Yeah, this was basically what happened to Australia when they went to South Africa and got 47, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
47. Was it 47 all out? Yeah, and actually in that innings there were some, you know, 25 for 9 or something until Nathan Lyon came and took them, made a few more runs. But you know, the point, a couple of points. One point I raised yesterday was, you know, when watching this whole collapse, I was like, how has India not collapsed for less than 42 before in their history? I mean, we have played in pitches so much worse and so much this. So I was like, okay, in a way, you know, we have dodged, India has dodged several bullets. And thanks to, you know, probably like that one partnership or one player who has, like somebody brought up Dravid's 27 at Durban when India made 66. I mean, had he not made 27, had he got out for a duck, who knows what could have happened that day. And the second point that came up in my head was, like, we have also been fortunate to see days like day four in Calcutta in 2001, when Lakshman and Dravid batted through the whole day. I mean, without losing a wicket through the whole day. And I was thinking, like, this, that is like the antithesis of this, right? Like, you go through a whole day, you know, not giving even like one. I mean, of course, there were chances and there was an LBW, which was probably plum. But even then, I mean, you to bat through a whole day is like the opposite of 36 or all out or whatever.
So that's why the difference is very, you know, stark when Dravid and Lakshman go through, you know, without getting dismissed throughout the day, you will have very few people coming and saying they won a lottery, right? You will not have people saying, in fact, they'll praise their greatness. What great partnership, what great batting, such flawless sort of performance. I know they had their chances, but who doesn't have, how they maximize their chances? Whereas here, it's very easy for us to turn around and say, hey, Hazelwood and Cummins, you know, got the lottery ticket. Or even to kind of, you know, the mirror image of that is basically rationalizing India's sort of dismissals. Is that, so this asymmetry is, I find it very problematic because there is a part of success which we are happy to celebrate despite the low odds and the inevitability of it over, you know, a large enough samples. But we don't seem to extend the same courtesy to, let's say, bowlers who strike rich. You know, No,
that's because I'll tell you. Because see, as somebody who regularly reads baseball reports and baseball pieces, the whole, you know, perspective is different. Like in baseball, the pitcher is the focus and the pitching is the focus. So automatically, like when, you know, a batter does something extraordinary, then people recognize that, you know, this is, not only was he great, he was also lucky. And, you know, to be able to do what that batting side did is not easy. So the focus shifts. But in cricket, the focus is on the batting. So if Dravid and Lakshman went through that, they were like extraordinary batsmen. But if these guys went through that, they were pathetic batsmen.
Do you remember at least in those games that we watched, but don't you remember that there were phases where bowling was slightly, you know, relaxed? You'd possibly bring some batsmen in to roll some, you know, roll his arm and bowl some overs. You'd get some easy overs is what I'm saying, where the intensity drop is, you know, perceivable. I don't see that in this Australian attack. Even I don't see that in the New Zealand attack of, you know, in the recently concluded West Indies test. They were relentless, man.
Ashoka, even the greatest West Indies side who were relentless, who, you know, who didn't even need the services of Larry Gomes and Viv Richards and Roger Harper on most days, on many days, they didn't get teams all out for 20s and 30s. They also, you know, and this I'm talking about like in the West Indies pitches of the 80s where Patterson came one day and just terrified England's out of their wits. They were like, they had their knickers all over the place. But I'm saying even that team never got teams out for so low. So it would take a remarkable amount of luck slash good bowling slash, you know, some kind of sloppy batting to get to this.
Basically, this is the this whole business of, you know, they maximize their for good fortune, you know, thing. It just drives me up the wall because it doesn't mean anything. You know, it's like every innings, every player is trying to survive on a ball by ball basis, right? And when you don't survive a ball, you get out and you go back. Right. So what else is a player supposed to do if he's not getting out? He's going to make runs, no? You know, that's like the runs are like a consequence of survival. You know, and survival is part a consequence of not just technique, but also good fortune. You know, and there's a certain amount of good fortune in surviving every delivery. And the bowler's job is to maximize the risk. You know, to maximize the need for fortune on delivery after delivery. And these Australians are really, really good at that. I mean, they're unusually good at that.
So I wanted to actually, you know, get back into the emotion part of it a bit because, you know, we should also talk about the, you know, talking about the heartbreak as such, you know, talk about the games that have stayed with us. I guess, again, since we're all of a certain age, it might be pushing it to when we were growing up. But for me personally, I wanted to bring in, you know, people have spoken about the 2003 World Cup against Australia. But, you know, for me, it was definitely a gruesome sight to see, especially the first over, the way Zaheer Khan went for all those runs and all that. But I wouldn't classify it as, you know, like one of my top heartbreaks, so to speak. For me, it's tough to look beyond, you know, of course, 81 all out. This is we named the whole podcast after it, which I've explained why it was a heartbreak, you know, all the lack of wins before and this one great chance to win a series, especially in West Indies, which was still a very, very good side then. I mean, they are still a good side at home, even now. But I would say for me, the biggest heartbreak was the Chennai 99 test.
Ah, don't say Chennai, man. I was about to say Chennai. You're stealing my stuff. Okay.
Yeah, but I think that there was something about that test. And I think it came from the fact of it. First of all, it went 5 days. So you're already pretty, you know, so invested in that test, having watched it so long. 5 days. The fifth day, you have a really good chase. You have a great, great innings and a great bowling attack to go with it. You know, a great innings against a great bowling attack. And that collapse, the suddenness of that collapse and something about the test, I mean, stayed with me for so long. I wrote a big piece about it last year and I still can't somehow get over it. I can't say I'm over Chennai 99. What about you guys?
Just slight detour here. When you said suddenness of the collapse, I was reminded of Arnab Goswami.
The sheer suddenness
of the collapse.
I can take up 1997, India versus Sri Lanka. 952.
How is that a heartbreak, man? Come
it's
on.
It's not a heartbreak. It's a slow, systematic demolition of the heart and the mind. Like, there was nothing left after that. Like, I questioned, should I even continue watching cricket? Because every day, that was a school time, right? So every day I would come back and it would be like that partnership of Mahanama and Jayasurya. It was not, you know, a sudden explosion of the heart or whatever. But it slowly killed a 13, 14-year-old boy there. It was a murder over 3 days.
No, but the thing about that test is you knew India is not going to lose. I mean, that test was headed for a draw for a long time. So, what was happening was your bones were being taken out of your body.
Yeah, it was desperation, man. Like, how can wickets not fall? I mean, this is like, and it also was starting with hopefulness, right? Like Nilesh Kulkarni gets a wicket and the day closes. Nilesh Kulkarni gets Attappattu and the day closes. And then over the next 2 days, you're slowly being killed. Like there is no escape from this. You can't look away also. Because there are only two channels by that point in the country. That you have to either look at the match or you have to look at, you know, some, you know, DD1 agricultural program. So that's the whole thing that you had. Then, so you can't look at it. I mean, you can't not look at it. And there was a train crash happening in slow motion. So it was pain.
It was a lot of pain.
Yeah, I think, that pain kind of, you know, it's still memorable. I don't know. I can't call it a heartbreak, but you stole my heartbreak. I mean, 99 was a proper heartbreak. I mean, 16 runs, 4 wickets, right? Like,
no, I mean, and it's two extremes, right? Like after 36 all out, you were talking about 950 something in school.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
That also had an element of comedy, you know, you won't believe, like me and my friend, we were watching that, you know, we were watching the final stages of that, you know, when we were wondering whether they'll get to 1,000 and all that. And we were just like, it is the definition of ROFL, right? I mean, rolling on the floor and laughing level of comedy.
Dude, I think it reached the level of
absurd by then.
You know what is more absurd? I think Jayasurya got out by 600 runs somewhere there. I don't know what exact score. But they made 300 after that. I'm like, what the hell, man?
That was Jayavardhane's debut, right? He came.
Yeah, I was like, who's this Jayavardhane guy? What the hell is he doing? Who are these people?
No, you know what's the most amusing part about that innings? I don't know why Ranatunga declared. What is the point? He might have as well scored 1,000 runs.
Oh, you know what was the, you know, conspiracy theorist theorem? Like the scoreboard did not have the fourth slot. So those guys requested these guys saying that, hey, you might want to declare. So we thought he'll declare
at 999. At least score 999.
Yeah.
No, but then it would have been obvious. So he didn't want to let his country down. He didn't want to tell the world that we don't have a scorecard which can't accommodate 4 digits.
It was a true nationalist.
Terrible.
So Manish, what was your great pain or pains?
I think couple is obvious, the 81 all out in 99. So you've already mentioned that. So I'm not going to kind of rehash it, so to say. The two which I think, the one which really hurt me the most was probably the 2007, the New Year test in South Africa, in Cape Town. That was again now one all going into the third test, pretty likely to be the first test series win for India over there. Sachin and Dravid batting in the second innings. You know, they were building a pretty decent lead. You know, both got 40s, if I'm not wrong. But for some odd reason, they were playing, who's that guy? Paul Harris, with so much respect. And apparently, I mean, subsequently, I got to know Sachin was kind of semi-injured. He had some sort of buttock pain or hamstring pain or whatever. But actually, Sachin didn't score 40. I think Ganguly scored 40. I'm just looking at the scorecard. But it was quite a bizarre sort of third innings from India. And you know, that session of play where both Dravid and Sachin kind of give so much momentum back to Paul Harris in South Africa, I think that hurt me a lot. I mean, it took me quite a while to recover from that. The other one came pretty close on the heels of this 2008 Sydney test, which you were covering, Sydney. I think to see that collapse in the last over was, I mean, I mentioned this before in 2001 when there was the first test I watched at Chepauk. And when Lakshman got out, the trauma of 99 was still so fresh. The four of us started walking back home. By the time we got down from the top of B stand to down, Sarit Bhavtale got out. Just a couple of days back, I went back to check the YouTube video of that. And even then, I was feeling nervous. I mean, I know the result. I know it's one of the greatest test series sort of wins of all time. It feels like, you know, as if I've never watched that. Like, you know, I saw Sami Dighe hitting a couple of streaky boundaries when I saw Harbhajan. Actually, Harbhajan steals a very streaky single to mid-off. He could have been run out. Had it been a direct hit, he would have been out. So I was feeling nervous on watching it like a couple of days back. So with that kind of a history, 2008 was quite a heartbreak. To see Michael Clarke getting those 3 wickets was quite a heartbreak, I would say. Even though I was probably much older and more mature, it was still hard to digest.
Yeah, I can see that. Had I been watching that, as a fan, I would have definitely probably felt the same way. The thing was, I was in the press box that day and trying to complete a, trying to get my piece in order. So I really didn't have time to, put too much emotion into that. So the way I remember it, I just remember how I was scrambling in the last minute and how these guys were collapsing one after the other. And of course, there was all this outrage about the catches. The umpiring decisions, and then Ponting took a catch there where the ball hit the grass and then still appealed and all that. So I remember it as a really chaotic evening rather than a heartbreak. But I can see what you're saying.
The whole evening was chaotic, but just the last over, the second last over, right? The one that Michael Clarke bowled was, yeah. I mean, to see three wickets falling like that. I mean, in fact, Ponting gave it to Michael Clarke as a sort of a, crazy thing, right? I mean, just 2 overs left, they had given up and, anybody can bowl this over. And then you get to see 3 wickets like that. That was quite heartbreaking. And in fact, I think a lot of the post-Sydney mess that happened between the two teams was heavily influenced by the one over. Had India managed to squeeze out a draw, I think the trajectory of the subsequent events would have been a lot different.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also what happened, like immediately after the victory as well. I mean, Australia celebrated, as Peter Roebuck said, like a pack of dogs, and didn't even shake hands with Kumble. They were quite ungracious towards the end, and all that basically built up. I mean, had it been a draw, all that would have never happened. And for all the teams would have been more amicable, and the anger wouldn't have been as much. But yeah, and I think in all that also the quality of the test is totally forgotten because of what happened afterwards. I mean, if you ask people to pick like great India-Australia tests, that test will probably not even come up because people forget that was actually technically a very, very good test and a thrilling test. But it doesn't come up because it's just brushed off as, oh, that Sydney test where the umpires messed up and where Australia behaved boorishly.
And even the umpires messed up is essentially what happened as a consequence, right? If Steve Buckner, let's say, didn't give Andrew Simons out, but it's not the quality of the decision. I mean, there was a shocker for sure, but it's not just the quality of the decision. It's what Simons went on to do later, which basically makes people remember so much of that.
Oh, yeah. Had he been out 2 balls later, then that might have not even been a big deal. Karthikeya, I know you don't have a heart, but surely you've experienced your heartbreaks.
These days, or in recent years at least, when I was in school, I used to have these same kinds of heartbreaks that you guys are describing all the time. But recently I sort of realized that, I always feel bad for teams which, are getting the sharp end of, the luck, I'll tell you one thing which disappointed me a lot, and I felt really bad for the team, and this will surprise you, was I think India in the 2019 World Cup, because I think that was, firstly, I think that was a really, really well-constructed Indian team. They had a very, very good idea of how they wanted to play in the one-day game. It was a very, they played superbly throughout the tournament. They had a good plan and they played according to their plan and it mostly worked. And then they ran into New Zealand and New Zealand beat the bat 16 times in the first 10 overs of the Indian innings and they got 4 wickets. And that basically finished India's tournament and it led to all kinds of nonsense being spoken about that team. I think that's the best ever Indian ODI side I've seen, and it was better than the 2011 World Cup winning side for sure. It had a better World Cup than the 2011 winning side for sure. I mean, that 2011 winning side had a lot of really sketchy performances in both the group stage. Remember the England and South Africa games and that, where you had Piyush Chawla and all these people playing and getting hammered. And Andrew Strauss, I think he made 160 or something. And
it was a tie, right?
Yeah, it was a tie or something. And then...
Sorry to spoil your party, Karthikeya, but please don't compare 2011. Why don't we go back to 2003? Compare Saurav Ganguly's team. Don't...
Oh, yeah. It goes without saying it was better than that.
You're just riling him up now.
Are you saying this team is better than Ganguly's team, really?
Of course.
Ganguly scored 300s in that World Cup. You know, captain's
it's
not.
It's miles better.
Okay, I mean,
it's not even...
better. That's fine.
It's... It's not even in the same universe.
Mahesh, that team had Dinesh Mongia bowling to Ricky Ponting when he crossed 100. Back.
Exactly. And yet Ganguly brought that team to the finals. That's my point. You had Rohit Sharma opening and scoring so many hundreds and you couldn't win a World Cup. You couldn't even reach the finals. You had Dinesh Mongia bowling and Ganguly took that team to the finals. Give him some credit, man.
Yeah, they were really lucky. their returns were better than they played, you know, whereas I think the 2019 Indian team played way better than their returns suggested. I mean, they should have won that World Cup. I think they would have beaten England in the final. I think that was a really good England. You know, that would have been a great World Cup win. To beat that England in England in a final, that would have been awesome. And they had the team to do it. And I think they would have done it. And I think deserved it because they played really well and they planned really well and they organized really well and they had really good ideas. And they built those ideas, you know, setting aside all kinds of nonsense. And it was really well done, I thought. But they didn't. And so now, you know, you have the, you know, they make fun of the, what's his name, 3D, whatever it is. The second one, I think, is I felt really bad for West Indies in 2019. Because they ran into Jasprit Bumrah, you know, he destroyed them. You know, India made 400, and then you know he reduced them to 20 for 5 or something, you know, and he was just unplayable. And I mean, he bowled well, but I mean, he's never approached that. The new ball has never swung from him like that either before or since. You know,
it was just
really unfair for the West Indies to have to run into that two innings in a row, you know, the fourth innings in I think it was Antigua, North Sound, and then at Sabina Park.
That ball to Jason Holder, I don't think I'll ever see a ball like that by anyone ever again. I mean, he had
like 3-4 balls like that, dude. One to Darren Bravo also was like crazy.
Yeah, there's an element of luck for the bowler in that, you know. I mean, okay, he's a very, very good bowler and he's got everything, and it's like a little bit like Hazelwood today, you know. It everything went his way. But, you know, you do, I mean, that's not, I mean, nobody ever bowls well enough to like get 5 for 8 as an average return, you know, or 6 for 27 as an average return, unless it's like a flat out minefield. And, you know, those things don't exist these days. So, yeah, that was, I thought that was a lot of, I felt really bad for West Indies in that series because they're a really good side.
Yeah, I mean they beat England at home, and you know they've been competing at home for a while.
Yeah,
now,
and Bumrah just killed that series. He just ended it. You know, he was just too good. I think he took what 13 wickets for less than 200 runs or something like that. That's just crazy.
I mean we've spoken about World Cups, by the way, and one World Cup game which definitely all of us will remember and would have probably felt a lot of grief over is that 1996 World Cup semi-final. Which didn't even get a chance
which, let's be fair, I mean, Campbell could have won it at that point in time.
Yeah, I mean, at least
he was very disappointed. He could have won it.
So, I mean, my only thing in that game was I'd wished it had finished I couldn't really feel the extent of grief because when they started throwing stuff onto the field and all, you're like, oh, okay, this has become a ridiculous situation now. So you can't even process your the pain that you're feeling, and you're then feeling angry for these guys who are throwing bottles inside.
Talking of heartbreaks, I totally forgot to mention the Asian Test Championship, the first test in Calcutta. That should rank right up. I think it's probably the outside of 1999 and 81 all out.
Shoaib Akhtar.
More than Shoaib Akhtar, the fact that Srinath got India off to such a fantastic shot. I think they're 25 for 5 or 25 for 6 or something like that. To go on to win a test from that is just is ridiculous. No matter how much you play out of your skin, no matter how much skill you have, whatever Shoaib Akhtar did there. I mean, even whatever Shoaib Akhtar did there was after India was like 100 for 2 or something, you know, like fairly off to a good start. And my hometown boy as well. So Ramesh got in there off to a very good start. I think that was a proper heartbreak.
Yeah, but again, for me personally, it was the same issue like the 96 for me, because that match was also had major crowd trouble and it ended pretty much with no one in the stands. You know, everyone had to be cleared out. So, you know, by the time it ended, you felt your emotion shifting more to what is wrong with these guys, like, you know, messing it up rather than just sheer, like pure grief is what I'm saying. But yeah, surely that was. And I think the other game to bring up in this context is the Karachi test in 2006, which I watched, you know, I was there that time. And again, Pakistan, Irfan Pathan took that hat trick in the first over and Pakistan were like in deep hole. And then
of
they
all
came
the
back
people,
they,
I think Kamran Akmal bailed them out.
Oh yeah, like fantastic 100. But again, I go back to the context here. India had already won in Pakistan in 2004. So here, you know, the sort of the extent of the heartbreak sort of softens by saying, okay, you lost this test, but then you won the previous series. Had that happened in Rawalpindi when India won in 2004, you know, had there been a heartbreak there, then I feel the pain is even more exaggerated because you've never won in Pakistan, right? Like, so I think for me now, the ultimate heartbreak that this current team can deliver, I mean, I don't want them to, but I'm saying can, is like if you go to South Africa where India has never won a test series and then you're in a position to win the series in a deciding test and then you collapse for 30 odd, then I think, you know, 20 years later, there can be a podcast with that name.
So, in the context of heartbreaks, please don't tell me your two most important heartbreaks were what happened in the last 2 years. Please go back. This is about sitting on the string couch. You know, you got to dial your life back, dig deep, find those traumatic moments from childhood which still makes you so insufferable for a lot of people.
Oh well, I'll tell you one which really I still remember, which is Sabina Park in 2002. When
that was a heartbreak. Correct.
Wavell Hines and Chris Gayle had that opening stand, and you know, Jeff Boycott was on commentary, and he was constantly saying for like 150 runs that man kept saying, West Indies are going well here, but they'd better proceed as though they have lost two more wickets more than they have lost. And he kept saying that and they kept scoring runs. And, you know, in the Indian fast bowling at that time was like, let's be kind and say it was average. And, you know, there was something to hit every over. And, you know, Wavell Hines and Chris Gayle at that time were not really, you know, Chris Gayle especially at that time was not really the fully formed final product. But that was sort of, at that time, you know, the heartbreak was because, you know, you did not have a really good sense of, you know, what a good team is and what a bad team is and why India are not a good team and, you know, why good teams don't win. You know, but once you realize that, then the heartbreak and everything goes out of the window. Then you know why things happen and they happen.
That series, I think Carl Hooper and Shivnarayan Chandrapal did not get out, right? Like, God, I mean,
That is a series which India lost to Cameron Cuffey, Adam Sanford, Pedro Collins, and Merv Dillon. Okay? This is like the greatest Indian middle order in the history of, you know, ancient and modern India. Okay? That is why I think that the basic idea in Test cricket is that it really doesn't matter who you're batting.
But you're missing the point, Katia. I think the greatest thing to come out of that series was Ajay Ratra scored a century. It was the greatest century by an Indian wicketkeeper. I think
on that wicket, you would have scored a century. I think there are like not even two full innings in 5 days in Antigua in that test match.
No, and the great point that you bring up, I don't know how I forgot that. The real heartbreaking aspect of that was India could have actually drawn that series had they batted for like 5 more minutes. Because everyone knew the rain was going to come. Every single person, I mean, the people on the ground, the grounds staff were standing there with the covers about to come on. the clouds were there. And, you know, I've heard that John Wright has never been more angry with anything in his sort of with the Indian team than he was that day. I mean,
Sunil Gavaskar was angry on TV, man.
Exactly, right? I mean, you bat five overs and you know it's going to rain, and then you draw the series and then they get out. And they get out in, you know, not by great balls or something. They get out with poor shots. So
yeah, Zahid Khan tried to hit a cover drive.
Exactly. So that was like proper heartbreak. And, you know, talking about West Indies, I guess from a West Indies point of view, they are, test where Shannon Gabriel had to survive one ball or, you know, and ended up swinging wildly and getting out might also be a heartbreak for, you know, like an epic heartbreak in that scale.
Oh, that way, I think Ashes, man. Ashes had heartbreak is there. A lot of things are heartbreaking.
Yeah, but there, you know, I don't really care one way or the other, you know.
Oh, yeah, then you're largely neutral. So anyway, on that note, I think we have covered some good ground. And I just want to end by saying that, you know, Mahesh brought up that piece that Siddharth Monga has written after this. And it's an interesting piece. I'll give a link to it. And it's a kind of piece that I never read when I was growing up. Like when India had a bad defeat or when India collapsed or when, rarely did or never did any sports writer emphasize the point that, luck is such a big part in the game and these things happen and India just got caught out and they didn't play well. I mean, back then the reports were largely focused on how India were inept. Heads must roll after this. Players must be dropped. Players can't take their place for granted. Of course, there were bits about the bowlers being good and everything. The cricketing bits were all there. But I'm happy that a leading writer today in a mainstream cricket publication is emphasizing the value of luck and circumstances and how anything can happen. And that is, I think, a big shift from 20 years ago.
Okay, fine. This is all very nice and wonderful. But I want to ask the main compere's question, which you should have led the conversation with, Sidney.
Which is what?
Is Prithvi Shah getting dropped?
I'm going to ask everybody, who is going to be punished for this? Who's going
Rahane,
to
Rahane. 100% Rahane. What was he thinking, dude? Are he hit straight to the fielder and he called Kohli for a run. I mean, if Kohli was not out, we would have made 400 for sure. Okay, then 36 all out, minus 15 all out, all would not have mattered because we would have had a 200 run lead. Right?
It was a brain fade.
I think you guys have started a parallel episode now. Okay, so I think on that note, with the Peanut Gallery taking over this podcast, let me sign off. And
what Peanut Gallery? This is how it should be started.
Yeah.
First, you must have accountability. Then we can have all sorts of nice discussions. But first, you must
exactly. No, first, we should have the match ka mujrim, and then
mujrim gone. Yes.
We are still waiting for Anushka Sharma's letter to the public where she apologizes, for everything. I don't know for what she needs to apologize. She has to.
Forget this whole
every
thing.
Every time India lose a match, she is trending on Twitter. I'm like, what is wrong with you? What the fuck, dude? Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, this is the tragedy of the situation that, I remember a time when India did really badly. This was probably in when they lost 4-0 to England, or I think it was at that time, but that when Javagal Srinath came out and he said that the Indian players need to apologize to the fans. And I was like, dude, you played for so long. You played in so...
We are still waiting for apology on 2003 finals. 80 runs in 10 overs a day. What is this?
No, I'm just saying that there was a time when... And I'm going back to Mahesh's point, where there was a time when, former players and, fans who genuinely, were invested in the sport were taking things to the extreme. But now, those people have realized that, same people like Javagal Srinath would have probably tempered their views. Well, then you have all the other, the extreme views of people saying Anushka Sharma should be blamed for this defeat. Anyway, so thank you so much for joining. Just a clarification, the podcast will continue to be 81 All Out. We have all been too scarred by that to change the name of the podcast. And as you can, as you would have realized by now, we are not as scarred by 36 All Out. But I urge, you know, anyone who has been deeply scarred by this to consider starting a podcast and or consider starting a website or anything. Or if you want to write a book about it, go ahead. But yeah, there should be some way to memorialize this day and this collapse. So feel free and go ahead. And actually, it will give me a lot of joy if I see, you know, 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line, if I see something named after this, because it would mean that it has actually genuinely hurt someone and they want to remember it and they want to, not forget it. So, yeah, I mean, heartbreaks are interesting in that way, that while a lot of your mind wants to get it out of the way and brush it aside and move on, there's also a bit of you that wants to hang on to it. And so that is why we continue to talk about all the heartbreaks that we do. So anyway, thank you so much, guys. Ashoka, Karthikeya, Mahesh, this was a good impromptu podcast, and thanks for joining.
Thank you.
India have won the test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India are home. Lords goes wide.